Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, March 24th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Studio 7 is going out to Zimbabwe on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us on www.studio7news.com or you can send us text messages at 001-202-465-0318.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Confusion continues in the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai as efforts to oust those calling for leadership renewal gain momentum.
It was an illegal meeting. That meeting was not sanctioned either by the provincial executive or by the president of the party through the national organizing secretary. It was an illegal meeting. The national organizing has stopped.
Parliament quizzes National Social Security Authority bosses on its investments in the health sector.
And the move by the South African government to compel Zimbabweans working in South Africa to reapply for work permits in their country of origin causes distress to many.
The confusion in the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai continued today at the party's headquarters, where a provincial meeting that had been called to deal with the leadership problems in Chitungwiza was called off at the last minute. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Divisions in the MDCT continued to be exposed at the party's Harvest House headquarters today, where the party's Chitungwiza provincial leadership managed to block the party structures from passing a vote of no confidence in them at the last minute, albeit temporarily. The opposition structures for Chitungwiza province had convened at the party's offices, reportedly to pass a vote of no confidence in the chairperson and other unnamed provincial members suspected to be aligned to suspended Deputy Treasurer General of the MDCT, Elton Mangoma, who is calling for Tsvangirai to quit his post following the MDCT's drubbing in last year's national elections at the hands of President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. The MDCT's provincial chairperson for Chitungwiza, Alexio Musundire, said the meeting was rolled over to Friday this week because it was unconstitutional. Insiders said the meeting had been called by the party's provincial secretary, Parirenya Twachari, without consulting Musundire in his capacity as chairperson as required by the MDC constitution.
It was an illegal meeting. That meeting was not sanctioned either by the provincial executive or by the president of the party through the national organizing secretary. It was an illegal meeting. The national organizing secretary has stopped the meeting.
Some MDCT members who attended the meeting but refused to speak on tape, fearing reprisals, told Studio 7 that the party's national organizing secretary, Nelson Chamisa, who is also in Mr. Tsvangirai's camp, caused the meeting to be cancelled, saying that the rescheduled meeting would be chaired by a member of the National Executive Committee of the party in order to stabilize the widening rift. Despite Musundire's claims that the meeting did not go ahead, Chari told Studio 7 that the provincial council in fact did go ahead. He said the council resolved to expel Musundire and the party's provincial organizing secretary, Kanisiwe Makururu, for allegedly aligning themselves with Mangoma. Efforts to get a comment from Chamisa were fruitless. However, some sources said the meeting was cancelled because Mr. Tsvangirai feared that there could be violence ahead of his meeting with diplomats tomorrow. The ongoing purge in the MDCT has claimed the scalps of the party's Manicaland chairperson, Julius Magarangoma, and his provincial spokesperson, Pishai Muchauraya, as well as Sengezo Chabangu, the party's chairperson for Matabele North Province. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
We also spoke with the MDCT's Provincial Secretary, Parirenya Twachari, who insists the meeting was held and that Musundire is now under suspension.
The Provincial Council of Chitungiza said today at 10 o'clock, and they recommended the suspension of the chairperson Musundire and the organizer Kalisiya Makururu. Reasons showing division in the party through factionalism and siding with between Angoma. Two, degenerating the office of president and his person. Three, sponsoring intra-party violence within the province and even hiring ZANU-PF charges to stabilize the party. Four, fielding double candidates in the July 31 elections resulting in the party losing to ZANU-PF. Five, conniving with the state apparatus to disrupt the provinces and holding up of a party rally in St. Mary's Chitungiza. Six, being figured in the disappearance of several party cadres in the province, notably Masaraure Akaduku. Those are the reasons.
But we hear from the people that you are saying have been suspended, they are saying the meeting did not take place.
The meeting took place in Musundire, just went out with the, out of 300 people, we went away with the 15 tanks, which were hired from ZANU-PF.
Mr. Shari, is the situation in your party so bad that you cannot sit down and discuss with each other civilly without really, you know, alleging that other people from other political parties are being used in this war situation, which we all know is about who should be leading the MDC? It's an internal matter, isn't it?
It's bad, boys. In our question, it's bad to connive with the state apparatus and conniving with some people from the other party. It's the question. It means you can be expelled automatically.
What evidence do you have?
In the 31 elections, he signed for 39 people, double candidates. And I signed for a proper person who was elected by the national to represent 123 when she read. And he sent the law and order police officers, and they have got a docket from law and order, which he wanted me to be arrested.
That was MDCT Provincial Secretary Parirenya Twachari in Harare. Meanwhile, in Manicaland, tension is still high as the MDCT provincial leadership continues to dig in following a letter of suspension written to some of the leaders. At the weekend, a group of disgruntled placard-waving supporters demonstrated at the party's office denouncing House of Assembly members Innocent Gonese, legislator for Mutare Central Prosper Mutseyami for Musigabanu, and Arnold Tsunga, MP for Dangamvura Chikanga. Manicaland spokesman Pishai Muchawuraya told Studio 7 they have disregarded the letter of suspension wrote to them last week because they consider it unconstitutional.
I'm not aware of that development. As I'm speaking right now, I'm at the provincial headquarters and I'm the provincial spokesperson. The provincial chairperson is also not aware of that development, and I'm sure there is nothing of that sort.
We understand that there were some people who were demonstrating against yourself and other Manicaland leaders at the weekend. Could you give us more light on that?
Yeah, there were close to 20 people who were hired to demonstrate against the bona fide leadership of Manicaland province. But we told them to go back home and think again and do the proper thing. If they want to be in power, the best thing was to go back to the people and canvass for support, not to come with some placards and just think that you can be in office through the back door.
We also understand there was a group of people believed to be aligned to yourself and other Manicaland provincial leadership members who were telling people that the weekend rally that was to be addressed by Mr. Tswangirai had been cancelled. Can you tell us more on that?
That is not a fact. It's actually a falsehood. It's being generated by those people who are not getting who would not have the people's support. It is not proper that we actually said that. We actually got the information that Tswangirai was coming to Manicaland to address in Chipping and to Mtasa Central, and we dispatched some vehicles to go and coordinate those meetings, and which he actually did. So as a province, we did not actually misinform the people, and there was no reason for us to misinform the people, because as a leadership, we've always been calling for transparency and freedom of expression here in Manicaland. It is actually some of the leaders who are saying, no, people must not express their views freely. People must not be heard. People must not be elected. People must get into power through back door. You see, but as Manicaland, we are very clear.
Bishai Muchauraya is the MDCT spokesman for Manicaland. He spoke on the line from Mutare. We also reached a Deputy Organizing Secretary Abednego Bebe for a response, and this is what he said.
Well, usually we don't comment or don't give comments to internal issues on the press, and whoever is aggrieved or he feels a short change in the party, he knows the party channels, and those are the channels that he has to follow.
We understand there was a demonstration against the so-called reformists in Manicaland over the weekend. Can you tell us more?
Well, I was not in Manicaland myself. I did manage to go to Chibinge, but I did not go to Mutare because I had another meeting to address in Bulawayo. So I'm not sure, I'm not privy to what exactly happened in Manicaland, so I cannot have a full comment on that.
That was Abednego Bebe, the MDCT Deputy Organizing Secretary. He spoke on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
Parliament today quizzed the National Social Security Authority bosses on NASA's investments in the health sector. Officials told the House that NASA at one stage reached out to the Public Service, Labor and Social Welfare Ministry in its bid to have the multi-million dollar Ekurhuleni Medical Center in Bulawayo operational after the Zimbabwe Healthcare Trust failed to raise required funds to run the private hospital. Ivan Chifera has details.
The story of Ekurhuleni Medical Center, a hospital in Bulawayo, is well known. A brainchild of the late Vice President Joshua Ngomo, it was constructed using public funds from NASA. It opened its doors briefly in 2004, but was shut down by the Minister of Health, saying its equipment was obsolete. Today, Parliament had the opportunity to quiz NASA bosses on the use of taxpayers' money in health projects in the country. Testifying before Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare on the company's investments, NASA General Manager James Matiza said repeated efforts to have its partners in the project, the Zimbabwe Healthcare Trust, operate the hospital have failed.
And when NASA realized that this thing was getting nowhere, and having tried for the past 13 years to have this project work, NASA decided to hand over this project to the parent ministry. So a comprehensive write-up was made and submitted to the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare, indicating that we as NASA have tried, working with Dr. Dube, to have this hospital open, but to no avail. May the ministry intervene so that this project gives NASA a return.
Several attempts to reopen the hospital have failed. Matiza told the committee that last year, the Zimbabwe Healthcare Trust informed NASA they had raised $12 million to buy equipment and needed a $6 million loan from NASA for operational costs. He added that even after availing the loan, the trust has failed to reopen the hospital. The trust had promised the hospital would be up and running by December last year. Matiza said NASA is worried that its investment in Ekurhuleni is not yielding any returns as anticipated, adding this has forced the pension fund to stop further health-related investments.
We wanted to do more. Because of Ekurhuleni Medical Center, we stopped for the past 13 years or so. We have not ventured into any new health-related institution because that has proved to be a bad example within our investment portfolio. We still believe that the Bulawayo community deserve the service from that hospital. This is why we are not walking away from that hospital.
He said if the Ekurhuleni project had been implemented smoothly, as was the case with the Chitungwiza South Med Hospital, by now NASA would have built at least three more hospitals in the country. Meanwhile, Matiza said the company does not lend money to individuals, but banks, companies and local authorities. He said title deeds are surrendered by the borrowers in case they fail to repay the loans. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The appointment of former CBZ boss John Mangudya to take over the reins at the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe by President Robert Mugabe the weekend has been received with mixed feelings in the country. Many, however, believe that he is the right man for the job. Mangudya is expected to start work at the central bank with effect from the 1st of May, taking over from former RBZ chief Gideon Gono. But some, including the Economita Global Capital, think that his association with the political establishment may be a blemish on his illustrious career that spans nearly 30 years. In a statement released today by the Global Economic Watchdog, the company said, quote, "The trust and belief politicians have in him might be an impediment for him to be his own man."
Dr. Mangudya worked at the central bank in the mid-80s before joining the African Export-Import Bank and later joined the Commercial Bank of Zimbabwe as a general manager in charge of international banking and later rose to become the group chief executive officer. He holds degrees from the University of Zimbabwe and a doctorate in business administration from Washington International University. Economic commentator Lakson Zembe tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that he thinks Dr. Mangudya is the right for the job, and without political interference, he can instill confidence into the banking sector.
It's a very welcome development, which has been welcomed by all people across all sectors, across all political divides, across all social divides, across all economic divides in our country, including, you know, people from outside as well who normally do business with Zimbabwe and looking forward to be doing business in Zimbabwe. So it's a very positive development, which gives hope and inspires confidence that things will change at the RBZ and that we'll get appropriate policies that stimulate economic activities beginning to take place within our country.
Can he bring in the much-needed change in the ailing economy?
That is the challenge that he has got, but it is not a challenge that he has as an individual. Transforming and changing the economy is not an individual's job. It is all of us. We are in it together. But however, they are leaders, and he occupies a very critical and important place within the economy in the sense that the RBZ is the one that drives the monetary issues within our economy and ensuring that there is sufficient supply of money and that also there is good regulation of money within the economy as well as the supervision of the financial sector within the economy. He is a very experienced, well-knowledgeable individual with both local, regional, and international experience. He is also somebody who is very firm and forthright, and we hope and trust that if he maintains the same stance that he has shown as he has been working through all these years, definitely that gives confidence that he will certainly make a positive mark towards the turnaround within the economy.
What about the foreign investors? Can we see him charming them?
There are any investors who are not coming in because of the leadership in that particular area of monetary policy, then suddenly, this should be able to instill confidence in them. However, what is important is that investors don't just look at the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. They also look at the political issues. They look at the policies that government puts in place.
That was economic commentator Lakson Zembe in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 154.55 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com or text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Zimbabwe joins the world in marking World TB Day.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Malaysia says a new analysis of satellite data indicates its missing passenger jet crashed in the southern Indian Ocean. Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak today said that a more thorough examination of the flight's path based on satellite data collected by a British company showed that Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 plunged into the water in a remote location west of Perth, Australia.
The United States is more than doubling its deployment of special operations forces to help search for warlord Joseph Kony. President Barack Obama ordered about 150 troops and at least four CV-22 aircraft to Uganda on Sunday, marking the first time the U.S. has sent military planes to find Kony and his fighters. The search is focused on the jungles straddling the borders of the Central African Republic, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo.
And week four of the Oscar Pistorius trial began today with a neighbor saying she heard screams from both a woman and a man on the morning the athlete shot and killed girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp. The testimony from Anit Stipp was consistent with other witnesses who said they heard a woman's screams coming from the home of Pistorius around 3 a.m. on February 14, 2013.
The move by the South African government to compel Zimbabweans working in that country to reapply for work permits in their country of origin has caused distress among some Zimbabweans, forcing them to pursue both a dialogue and the legal route. Acting South African cabinet spokesperson Phumla Williams told the media that Zimbabweans who complied with the relaxed requirements and who were given permits under the special dispensation for Zimbabweans project in 2009 would be allowed to reapply in their country of origin. Williams added that the South African Home Affairs Minister will hold a separate briefing session to elaborate on how the process will unfold. The development has angered some Zimbabweans who have vowed to take South Africa to court over the fate of Zimbabweans in that country. The Migrant Workers Association of South Africa says it will sue Pretoria as it has information that the permits will not be renewed. A spokesman Daniel Muzenda of another group representing Zimbabweans, the Zimbabwe Migrants Association, says it is pursuing dialogue for now and they have approached the Zimbabwe embassy to kickstart talks.
We had a meeting on Saturday in Midrand and we had representatives from Human Rights Africa, Association of African Refugee Authority, Zimbabwe Diaspora Association. We also intended to have Gabriel Shumba of Zimbabwe Exiles Forum, but unfortunately he was occupied, he could not attend the meeting. But however, he submitted his position on the issue of permits, and we unanimously agreed that we should submit to the Consular General, Mr. Magwenzi, at his offices in Joburg, about the concerns of Zimbabweans. We have established that Zimbabweans had businesses here in South Africa, and most of them, they have established relations, they have families here in South Africa, and most of them, if they are to go back to Harare, they will be out of employment. And looking at the unemployment rate in Zimbabwe, again, it means that most of the Zimbabweans will be unemployed. And we also established that this can also promote xenophobic violence. Because the South Africans, on the 3rd of November, they are definitely going to say, you Zimbabweans, you are supposed to go back to your home country. And this is going to promote xenophobic violence.
But did you try to talk to the Pretoria authorities about this development?
First of all, we wanted to apprise our office here, the ambassador, to go and give the Pretorian authorities our concerns. And then after that, if they fail, and if we don't get a feedback, we are definitely going to go and see the Minister of Home Affairs.
Spokesman Daniel Muzenda of the Zimbabwe Migrants Association speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg. Zimbabwe today joined the international community in commemorating World Tuberculosis Day under the slogan, Reach the 3 Million. Tuberculosis is a curable disease which affects some 9 million people annually worldwide, out of which one-third or 3 million people are said to be unable to receive the treatment they need. The 3 million people live in the world's poorest and most vulnerable areas. Health experts say early treatment requires understanding the most common symptoms of TB, which include chest pains, weakness, weight loss, fever, night sweats, and a prolonged cough lasting over 2 weeks. Though TB in many sub-Saharan countries, including Zimbabwe, is HIV-driven, health experts are warning against the stigmatization associated with the illness, saying having the curable disease does not mean a person has HIV or AIDS. Dr. Owen Gurungi of the Health Ministry's AIDS and TB unit says, as Zimbabwe officially commemorates World TB Day on Thursday, officials will be pushing for early TB screenings, hoping people will shy away from stigmatizing the HIV and TB co-infection. Reporter Atatenda Gumbo spoke to Dr. Rutendo Bonde, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights, who explains how TB affects a person and how it can be treated or cured.
Bacteria, it is spread by inhalation by droplet infection. So you have to be in contact with somebody who already has TB. Now, it depends now on your body's response. So TB will manifest in different ways. Tuberculosis will manifest in different ways. But the most common manifestation is that of a persistent cough, which is more than 2 weeks, night sweat, fever, as well as dramatic weight loss. So those are the common, you know, those are the common triad of tuberculosis. And it is treatable, 100% treatable.
As you're explaining that TB itself is very curable, what becomes the issue when people fail to go get checked out? Some people say that it links to the issue of HIV.
Definitely, there is no organ which cannot be affected by TB. But because it is initially spread through inhalation, TB of the lungs is the most common. Now, in a situation where the client has a compromised immunity, such as in old age or such as in HIV positive clients, then you will expect that TB to be in other locations.
That was Dr. Rutendo Bonde, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. She spoke from Harare.
And now we go to our weekend sports update. It was a busy weekend in the English Premier League. Arsenal fans suffered a massive heartbreak with a 6-0 defeat to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, cementing the Blues' campaign for the Premiership title. In other results, Aston Villa 1, Stoke City 4, Tottenham Hotspur 3, Southampton 2, Cardiff City 3, Liverpool 6, Chelsea 6, Arsenal 0, Everton 3, Swansea City 2, Hull City 2, West Bromwich Albion 0, Manchester City 5, Fulham 0, Newcastle United 1, Crystal Palace 0, Norwich City 2, Sunderland 0, West Ham United 0, Manchester 2.
And in the La Liga, Ronaldo claims a classical conspiracy in an astonishing ref rant. Cristiano Ronaldo, Chris, is saying, in fact, today made a series of astonishing accusations against the referee Alberto Undiano Malenko after Real Madrid lost the Clásico 4-3. Barcelona were awarded 2 penalties to Madrid's 1, while Sergio Ramos was shown a straight red card after bringing down Neymar for the first spot kick. And here are the other Spanish results. We have Malaga, which beat Celta de Vigo 2-0, and we also have Real Madrid, as we said, it lost 3-4 to Barcelona, and Valencia 2-1 to Villarreal. Unfortunately, time is not on our side, but let us, you know, just remind the listeners to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about World TB Day and, you know, the challenges that you are facing.
And that's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, leaving you in the capable hands of Sister Ndekile and Ntunga Milinko.